Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the March 18th, 2012 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard. It's the podcast devoted to the discussion of news and politics from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy, Objectivism. I'm your host, Amy Peikoff, and here are the topics I have planned for today. First, Rick Santorum, presidential candidate, pledges, if elected, to crack down on the tremendous evil of internet pornography. Yeah. Okay. Second, several U.S. soldiers were killed in the last month by their supposed Afghan allies and counterparts. How are these cases being reported, both by the Pentagon and the press, and is anything being done about it? Then, a big surprise, Obamacare will cost at least twice as much as we were originally promised, and more. Those of you who are attending live here are invited to call in and weigh in on these topics with us. Please do. It's 760-888-5817. Again, that's 760-888-5817. A couple little announcements before we dive into the topics. First, I think some of you know I have an account that I started on Twitter last July called the Ayn Rand Bot. And what it does is it tweets out quotations from Ayn Rand, and I've got about 16 tweets going out per day. I have a little algorithm that I've programmed, and it's a certain frequency, certain times of the day. People all over the world follow it, and now it has reached over 6,000 followers, which is wonderful. And one of the recent followers came from the Ukraine. So people all over the world are retweeting quotations from Ayn Rand, discussing them. My database has somewhere on the order of 550 quotations in them now, and each time that I restart the database over again, because it kind of randomly sends out through the whole database, each time I restart it, I add more. So it's a growing thing. If you don't already follow it on Twitter, it's Ayn Rand Bot, just like as if that's all one word, and you'll find it easily. Second thing I'd like to talk about is this summer, I don't know if you've checked it out already, there's going to be a conference in San Diego. It's the Objectivist Conference, a.k.a. OCON. People call it OCON, O-C-O-N. And I will be giving an elective course called Toward a Society of Privacy. The course will be about the value and also the legal protection of privacy. If those are topics that interest you, please come and join us. You can check out the website at objectivistconferences.com, and see the whole schedule of the general session and the optional course lectures. There's a great variety. Leonard Peikoff will be doing a Q&A. There's a couple of lectures from Tara Smith, general session lectures I'm really looking forward to. A lot of good stuff. I think there's also an introduction to objectivism course that goes throughout the week. So I actually, just being biased myself, think a great day to start your day, I mean a great way to start your day at the conference, would be to go to the introductory course and then immediately after come to my elective course, because my elective course follows in the time slot directly after the introductory course in the morning. So I look forward to hopefully seeing some of you there. That would be wonderful. Martin in the chat room mentions about my Ayn Rand bot that you can follow it on Facebook as well. So if you're not into Twitter, you can also look for Ayn Rand bot on Facebook. It's not quite as popular on Facebook, I think, A, because it hasn't been there as long, but also because it really was set up originally as a Twitter account. And so what happens is that the tweets are automatically sent to Facebook, but they are shorter. You know, Facebook, I could be sending out longer tweets, but in order to have the nice automation that I have set up, it's got to come there directly from Twitter. Some people have a hard time on Facebook because they'd like to share the messages from the Ayn Rand bot, but you have to copy and paste them because of the weird way that Twitter shares messages. It's not like a normal status update that you can just click share and easily share it. So people do have qualms with it, but I actually like the fact that Facebook even lets me send them out automatically through Twitter, so it's a good thing. Okay, so let's get into our topics. The Daily Caller story this week, published on the 14th, says vigorous Santorum crackdown may catch internet porn viewers with pants down. Ha ha, right? Do you appreciate that, Bosch, as the headline or
yeah.
What?
Yeah, I think I wrote, Santorum is going for a bigger government. How was it?
And even bigger government.
To go hard on internet porn.
Yes.
And then, also regarding Puerto Rico, he wants Puerto Ricans to speak English. And if I was a bad punster, I would say, porno Rick O. But since I'm not, I won't. So, everyone.
Right. So, the first sentence of this article on the Daily Caller by Stephen Nelson says, internet pornography could conceivably become a thing of the past if Rick Santorum is elected president.
Well, isn't Rick Santorum a thing of the past as well? Like, anyway.
He's starting to become a thing of the past as far as I know.
Ridiculous.
They just announced today that, surprise, surprise, Romney won Puerto Rico. So there are some delegates, I guess, from Puerto Rico. I don't know exactly how this all works, but even though Puerto Rico is a territory, a U.S. territory, not
right.
a state.
Right.
They do have some delegates.
I think what happened is that he had that shirtless picture where he was laying out, and that was it. I think they voted.
I thought it
that.
Was the part when he said they all had to have English as the official
right.
language.
That's right. That plus that,
That's really the time to become popular, is to go into Puerto Rico and say, you must do this if you want to become a state. And as it is, as I understand, I mean, I don't know a lot about Puerto Rico, but I've heard a little bit this week because of Rick Santorum going in there and making
right.
these gaffes about Puerto Rico. But they said something like, why would Puerto Rico want to become a state? Because there's so many benefits that they already have now,
right.
and that
right.
all they'd have to do, they'd have to actually give up quite a bit to become a state. So it's not even to their advantage to become a state anyway, and especially not if Rick Santorum is president, which I think he probably won't be.
No.
So let's continue with the article. It says, the unapologetic social conservative, currently in second place behind Mitt Romney for the GOP nomination, has promised to crack down on the distribution of pornography. He says in a statement posted to his website, quote, the Obama administration has turned a blind eye to those who wish to preserve our culture from the scourge of pornography and has refused to enforce obscenity laws, end quote. So if elected, he promises to vigorously enforce the laws that, quote, prohibit distribution of hardcore obscene pornography on the internet, on cable satellite TV, on hotel motel video TV, in retail shops, and through the mall or by common carrier.
Can I just say something about Romney and Santorum?
Sure.
I think behind the scenes, Romney somehow, pushed Santorum to run for president to make Romney look
acceptable
by comparison.
I mean, the more you look at Santorum, the better Romney looks.
That's it. I mean, it's incredible, but he was able to do it.
Yeah. Although the idea of Santorum vanquishing internet pornography may seem far-fetched, the article continues, says, a serious effort to combat online smut might actually be successful, says UCLA law professor Eugene Volokh. And I know Eugene, he knows his stuff. Yeah, this is Volokh, quote, if the government wanted to aggressively move against internet pornography, it could do so, explained Volokh. Here's the deal. In most parts of the country, a lot of pornography on the internet would plausibly be seen as obscene, end quote. There are a few approaches he could pursue, and Volokh says, quote, it wouldn't be that difficult to close down a lot of the relatively visible websites that are used for the distribution of pornography if they're in the United States, said Volokh. The Santorum administration could take the American-based porn distributors to court for violating obscenity laws and then have them shut down. Of course, the foreign-based sites would be left untouched. To black out the foreign sites, he'd have to have legislative action that would say that the ISPs would have to use a mandatory filter set up by the government. But the government could prosecute individual citizens who view pornography. How embarrassing would that be? Can you imagine?
Yeah.
You're drug into court because you viewed pornography on the internet.
It's incredible. I mean, that's just, that is the issue of our time, though.
Yeah. Here's more. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so important.
Big government, jihad, whatever.
Here's more from Bollock. Quote, although the Supreme Court says private possession is constitutionally protected, it has said that private receipt of pornography is not protected. End quote. I love the logic of some of the Supreme Court holdings. If you possess it already, then that's constitutionally protected. Of course, the fact that you possess it probably means, unless you produced it yourself, right, that you received it at some point. But the receipt of it is not protected, only the possessor. More from Vollett. Quote, you can't prosecute them all, but you can find certain types of pornography that are sufficiently unpopular for easy convictions. And that would probably be weird, like, snuff videos that you've heard about where it's like, like really gross stuff.
But according to him, it's all the same, though, probably.
To Santorum, I mean, it's
child pornography, snuff films.
It's definitely all the same, because we'll talk more about Santorum and his lovely views. Most contemporary prosecutions for the receipt of pornography are because the government can't prove its suspicion that the accused has committed a lot more serious crime, says Vollock. So this is like tax evasion for the mafioso.
That's right.
He speculated that there aren't more prosecutions because, quote, that prosecutor isn't going to win a lot of votes in the next election, end quote. Yeah, I mean, if anybody's got pornography, they're going to be afraid that they're going to be next. Of course, the government would have to have extra money in the budget for additional porn prosecutions because we really need to spend more, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. He wants to go bigger government here. You know, we'll have to go bigger. Than we are, and he's fine with that, long as it's for moral issues.
What was the tweet that you sent out about that? You said the bigger government to go hard on porn? An even bigger government, because that's what we need. And he is not, Santorum is not an enemy of big government. If you listen to the various things that he's wanted to do.
He wants to use government
for
moral
have to
reasons,
have,
quote unquote.
Yeah, he's going to have a whole division of the DOJ dedicated to going out and searching out these people who enjoy porn.
I have a cartoon called called Anti-Pornographer in Chief, Political Porn. That's all.
Yeah. Now, one of the problems, of course, with doing this is, and this is as Jonathan Turley, a law professor at George Washington University, noted, quote, what constitutes obscenity remains maddeningly. Oh, can you pronounce that?
Maddeningly.
Maddeningly.
But don't do it. I mean, I just...
Vague.
This guy, he... I don't mean to interrupt. Apologize. Yeah. But it hurts him if someone else is watching things that he finds offensive. And politically, we'll have to do something about it as president of NYSE America. I mean, does it hurt him because he wants to get in on it as well, but he feels guilty because of his religion? Who knows? I mean, is he envious of those who can... I don't know. Who could watch this stuff guilt-free? I don't know.
Now, the two law professors apparently have different views about whether judges and juries would go along with a crackdown by Santorum. Turley from George Washington University says that federal courts are reluctant to define movies or pictures as obscene based on such different opinions in society. So for that reason, Santorum's view of the standard falls well outside the accepted view of the case law, end quote.
There's a comment there. Do you mind if I...
What kind of comment do we have here?
Well, Deborah cites, and it's true. I think Santorum in a lot of ways is exposing the alleged pro-freedom popular conservatives like Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin. Up until this point, I thought they were. Mm-hmm. Truly freedom. I mean, you know, Rush to an extent, at least Mark Levin, but he cites him as a man, you know, how should you put it here?
A fighter for freedom?
Yeah, a fighter, yeah. He's not.
So Mark Levin is saying that Rick Santorum is a fighter
for
freedom.
He is not a fighter for freedom. He's not. And, you know, so what's called, Levin is bringing himself down by propping up this big government, you know, moral hack. I mean, I just, it's sad, but it is what it is. People are exposing themselves here because they, and, you know, he would not win the nomination. He probably won't. And if he does, he will lose against Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And it will show these people what this whole social conservatism, you know, what happens to it when it's taken to the test. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Now, Vollock says that practically speaking, nobody is actually enforcing it. He says, in the 1990s, internet porn wasn't a priority for the Clinton administration, and by the time the Bush administration took the helm in the early 2000s, it seemed unlikely that anyone would win the war on porn online, end quote. But, says the article here, that's not going to deter Santorum. He has promised in his anti-porn statement to appoint an attorney general who would carry out his wishes. Okay, I got to get this word. Maddeningly. Wow. Okay. That is a tongue twister.
Apologize to everybody if I interrupted Amy. Apologize. I just have those things. That's all.
You have some good stuff here. Yeah. So here we go. So in terms of a proper function of government, going after pornography, just plain old pornography, is totally out of bounds. Because, again, what is a government supposed to do? A government is supposed to protect our rights. It's supposed to protect us from the initiation of force. How is that, getting rid of pornography, how is the availability of pornography any sort of initiation of force? It's not. Now, if you could prove that the only reason that somebody was helping to make a pornography video is because they were forced in some way to do it.
Absolutely right.
Okay, that's a whole different story. It's also a different story if you're talking about child pornography.
Absolutely right. But he doesn't make that distinction.
No, he doesn't make that distinction.
And that's his problem.
So, but, you know, suppose it's child pornography. Even then, this is something that is traditionally part of the state government's function, not the federal government. The states are supposed to deal with criminal law. So this is completely outside the bounds of what he should be thinking about. The other problem, which one of the law professors in the article, the one from George Washington University, Turley, I think, mentioned, is the concept of obscenity, right? I mean, there are court cases in which judges have said, I'll know it when I see it.
Right.
Whatever is obscene, I'll know it when I see it. Now, then they have these, you know, phrases about, you know,
what
community
standard?
Community standards of decency, generally accepted community standards of decency.
That's the whole point.
Obscenity is a concept, like so many others that are in our non-objective laws, that are improperly there, and I think it's because they are evaluative. There are certain things that I would call obscene that you might not call obscene, that people here online in the chat room wouldn't call obscene. But the point is that it's not a judge's job to say, okay, well, we're going to call this obscene, and we are going to apply the retaliatory use of government force.
This is what
to
he's talking about.
Disallow the obscene, right? So he's talking about bringing government force, retaliatory force, to bear on people who have not violated anyone's rights. It's completely wrong. Any law that talks about obscenity is non-objective because of the use of the concept, and also because of the fact that it is, you know, not pursuant to a proper function of government. It's not protecting rights. So there's all that. It's wrong. It's completely wrong. Plus, it is the absolute last thing that any candidate should be worried about right now.
Not the absolute last.
I think the absolute last is that stupid contraception. They want to ban contraception.
But we are in, you know, in deep you know what.
Yeah.
And this is his concern.
Well, and then he's going to
look who's in the White House.
He's going to devote resources to this.
Yes, he will. And he's wasting his time, wasting our time, even talk about this. But we have to fight against it. Robert brings up here, Robert from New York. He says, did you guys see someone on Facebook posted a scene from The Sopranos when Tony Soprano mentioned Santorum regarding gays? And you know what? I saw a picture. It was a close-up of Santorum in that porn article. A close-up. He resembled Tony Soprano. He resembled the actor who played him.
But you didn't see the thing that Robert's talking about.
No, we must have seen the episode. But just, I remember something about that. I got to watch it again on the Facebook. I guess someone has it there.
Okay.
But yeah, he brings it up regarding gays, and that's pretty funny.
Someone had told me that if you go to Santorum's site on the issues, the issues tab, that this was towards the top of the list of issues. I'm thinking that the list is chronological, so now it's moved its way down.
Maybe.
It's actually at the bottom of the first page of all the issues, but the fact that it would be
I think he put
on,
it in the closet of his website.
The idea that it would be on the page of top issues that are priorities
this is embarrassing.
Is ridiculous.
This is
I see
it's
this.
It's not important, you know. Anyway, so someone's calling.
Oh, yeah. Let's go ahead and take a call on this topic here. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
Hey, Debbie. So do you love Santorum? And
more?
You're just upset that somebody else grabbed him first, right?
Yeah. I just I don't know how I could like it anymore. Huh. You know, this just made me think of, you know how recently he had made
You know,
that
Deborah, post. Deborah, we're having a hard time we're having a hard time hearing you out. Now, maybe it's the way you're holding the phone, or?
Is it better now?
It's a little bit better. Anyway, try to talk and we'll see how it goes.
Okay. So this just made me think of his recent rant. We heard him talking about how Satan has taken over America. And one of the things that he cited was, I forget how exactly he said it, but it was like sensuality or something like that, like as being one of the ways that Satan gets in and like gets control of us. And so I just kind of think there's this connection somehow between that, you know, view in his mind and this burning need to go after internet porn. It just kind of occurred to me that maybe those two things are connected somehow.
I just, you know, I hate to do this in terms of psychologizing and stuff, but I just wonder what kind of weird skeletons this guy's got in his mind.
If this is going to spill over into the public, him making a major issue during a presidential campaign, who the hell knows what's going on behind the scenes? I mean, it literally spilled over into the open, so it's like, wow.
I don't know about these people's views of sex. And then some of the debates.
I mean, he looks a little haggard now. I'm joking.
You're so bad.
That's bad.
You are terrible. So, some of the debates, when they've had discussions about whether life begins at conception versus implantation, right, when they're actually explicitly sort of bringing up issues of contraception and whether they'd be up for banning contraception, this shows the hugest evil streak ever in these people. Now, if you look at, you know, his actual website and everything, you see he has a family of 7 children. And
so
he
must have had sex 7 times at least.
At least 7 times,
okay.
Right? But, you know, he's been married to his wife for 21 years and they have the 7 children.
7 times,
the youngest child has one of the trisomies. I can't remember if it's 13 or 18. But she's terribly retarded and hugely physically compromised and requires all sorts of special medical attention all the time and probably won't live a whole lot longer, right?
No.
So his ideal, he would like to ban contraception. And I don't think he's alone among some of these religious conservative candidates in this. And if you think about the evil of this, right? I mean, this is what really makes me hate these guys. They're leaving the woman's choice as follows. And this is even for married women. But, I mean, I don't think they should be telling women, married, unmarried, whatever, about their sex life. But they want to tell married women, look, don't have sex. Or, as you get older, you better stop having sex. Because what happens is, you know, as women get older, they have a higher risk of having these babies with the genetic defects. So you have to be afraid. If you are a woman who doesn't use contraception, that if you have sex, and of course you're not allowed to have an abortion, right? That would be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to risk bringing retarded, physically suffering, doomed to die children into the world. And of course, you're going to be enslaved to care for them. And that's what sex is going to stand for in your mind, because that's going to be the very real possibility that's open to you. They want women to have that. And then what are the men? I mean, yeah, the men can't get pregnant, but supposedly are they going to be faithful to their women? So they don't necessarily want to bring these children into the world either. So what, they just don't have sex?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that seems to be the answer. You hear these women calling to conservative talk radio shows, and they're not always talking about single women either. And they'll say, well, she could always kept her legs closed or something like that. And it's unbelievable, even when they're talking about married women. And as far as having this little girl, you know, like the Santorum severely disabled daughter, he said that she was the ideal and that we should all be more like her.
Right. I watched that video too, yeah.
That's sick. That is sick.
And I'm sorry, that is not the ideal.
And also,
the ideal human being is one that can at least use his rational faculty.
And then he gets the test, you know, deliberately.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a bunch of them. They won't take advantage of any of the tests where you could use,
screen.
You can screen these things now. Now you can even screen these with a simple blood test.
But that's even against the religion,
They won't even take a simple blood test that's available now to screen for this, these trisomies, Down syndrome and the 13 and the 18. It is pure unadulterated evil.
Yep.
I don't know why anybody would do that and put themselves through it.
And bring someone, to suffer. And this girl won't live for long.
And you could sort of say, okay, well, when you're younger, if you don't use contraception, at least if you get pregnant, you're going to have healthy kids, more likely than not. Still, I mean, I think anybody of any age should screen, right? Because they don't want to go through this heartache. But my gosh, I mean, this idea of having these women, they're in their 40s. They're supposed to not have sex or bring into the world these kids.
Yeah.
That's what he is saying he wants to impose on his wife. His wife. Yeah. I mean, this is the life he wants for his wife.
And on everyone else.
And for him and for everybody else. I don't know if I can imagine much more that is more evil.
What's his argument against the Taliban and these guys? That they have a competing religion. That's about it. Well, they're not my religion. What's his argument? What's his fundamental physical, what's his fundamental philosophical argument against them? Nothing.
No, I know. Mike in the chat room says, pregnancy is like gambling for these people. And it's true.
Yeah.
They will be consciously ignorant about it.
Yeah.
I have seen
avoid
these women.
Yeah.
They'll say, God is giving them as a gift.
And then just a reminder about what Santorum said, his daughter gets raped, that he couldn't, advise her to get an abortion because it's a gift from God, regardless of the fact that she was raped. So
that's
she would
right.
bring in, this is sick stuff. I mean, this is evil, sick stuff. And for this guy to be actually gaining in the polls, I mean, actually giving a challenge to Romney. I mean, Romney's a piece of crap, but this guy, wow.
Yeah, I can only hope that the reason he's doing relatively well against Romney is because of how bad and how pathetic a candidate Romney is.
Absolutely.
And
right.
how he's, Romney's really, making a lot of people mad with the way he's campaigned so negatively and the fact
yep.
that he doesn't really stand for anything and the fact that he passed something almost identical to Obamacare when he was the governor. I mean, I hope I'm right that that's the only reason that Santorum has done as well as he has, that and the fact that he's basically had the endorsement of people like Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin.
Right. And Rush Limbaugh has, he has pretended not to endorse anyone. I have not been able to listen to him, up until recently. I just really can't. But he was for Santorum, almost indirectly, by things that he wasn't saying against him. He was for him. And it's just, it's again, revealing of what these guys are really about and what they are when it comes down to it. They got no problem with political power when it comes to their issues being pushed. Nothing.
Yeah. I don't understand how, especially someone like Mark Levin, who's written entire treatises on,
absolutely,
purportedly defending the individual
and
glorifying.
And he cites Ayn Rand. He calls her brilliant. I mean, he's one of the better thinkers on the talk radio on the right. And for him to go behind Santorum, this is just, for him, he just crippled himself.
Yeah, it's really shocking. It's hard to really understand how he can have that gaping a contradiction.
Yeah.
And the only thing that can make it possible, I think, is his conviction that religion is
yeah.
just inherently good and
right.
that it's the basis for things that are good.
Yeah.
One thing you're saying here, Mike in the chat room says, Santorum is actually doing horribly, especially if he's losing to Romney in this day and age. That's true.
Well, no, the fact that he's still in the race, that's the thing.
Romney lost to McCain, who lost to
did.
Obama.
Oh.
So Santorum is losing to
right.
someone
who lost to
a loser.
That's right. That's right.
Well, that makes me
so
feel better,
doing,
Mike.
Yeah. But, I mean, I hesitate to say this, but I'm sorry. I actually think it's true. I think a lot of Santorum's popularity is because of his social issues focus.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's just revealing about the country, which is sad. And it's also just, it came to the surface now because in their mind, he is the anti-Obama BS. He's absolutely not. He's the id of the right. He's the guy that is like Obama. He just happens to be on the right. And that's it. Big government pushing these issues, going against the country in a lot of ways.
We've got Robert in the chat room, and he says he actually disagrees. He says he's not as down on Romney as everyone else. He says Santorum is the pure conservative, which all the pure conservative media, Fox and talk radio, fits the mold. They can't get past Romney's Mormonism. So it's all kind of a religion thing? But see, Romney does have those two obvious flaws, which is that he's milquetoast. He doesn't really stand for anything. He's known as flip-flop, and that he did enact something that is very
horrific.
Similar to Obamacare.
And, you know, he rarely speaks about his religion, never speaks about it, actually. I mean, maybe he does at churches certain times, but
he is looking better to me compared to Santorum,
Compared to Santorum, and that's the only thing, period. And then compared to, Obama, Romney seems a little better.
Well, I mean, Romney, I guess, seems a lot better than Obama.
I wouldn't say a lot. I couldn't do that.
Really?
But definitely better.
Maybe when we talk later about Obama's latest executive order,
you
might change your mind. I the more you learn about Obama and what he would probably do in a second administration, jump on the ABO, anyone but Obama, bandwagon.
The moment of truth will come in November, and we will have to make a choice. And, you know, this guy has to be kicked out. There's no question, so.
Yeah.
But you would you vote for Santorum over Obama?
No, I couldn't. That's the one
you
guy.
You just stay home,
No, he
I guess.
Makes my blood boil. Romney doesn't. Romney really annoys me. He's like a disgusting politician. But this guy makes me sick because I believe he believes all this crap.
Got Martin in the chat room. He says, people are looking for morality. They sense that the world is in a crisis and that the root is a moral one. Sadly, the only alternative to them is religion. We've got the amoralism
of the left
or the religion of the right.
People who don't think, definitely that's true. Because they equate religion with morality.
How can we tell people, and I mean, since they're brought up with these religious beliefs, the idea that you're going to get them to abandon the belief.
Well, a lot of these people believe if there's no God, wouldn't I do? It's like, wait a minute, you're telling me you have a leash, an invisible leash from this, imaginary person in your mind? I mean, just without that, you're going to go wild and go crazy and do who knows what.
Do all sorts of horrible
things.
Then
they're immoral. I mean... Then they are immoral people, and they're only being allegedly good because of that leash.
Yeah, and when you're raised very religious, you almost kind of get this paranoia built into your thinking, because you're told that God knows what you're thinking all the time.
Right.
So if you think something evil, that makes you guilty. And so it's like you're afraid to even let yourself think certain things, because it's like God's going to see you thinking it. And I mean, it's just. And it's really hard to overcome. I mean,
and you could backtrack to the nature of those who would actually concoct those kind of ideas. They're evil people. They want to control.
Oh yeah.
That's just they're
they want you to
evil.
Feel guilty all the time.
Do what they want you to do, and that's it.
I remember, because when I was a kid, I decided pretty early on that I wasn't religious. About age 12, explicitly, I tackled the issue, and. After that, when I thought about who I wanted to be friends with, or if I thought about, having a boyfriend at a certain stage, whatever, who could I relate to? And I explicitly used to think that I could not relate to people who constantly thought they had another being watching over them all of the time, 24 hours a day, that was just such a foreign mindset to me. I dismissed it. And so, we're talking as a teenager, I explicitly identified for myself that was a foreign mindset that I rejected. And, as time went on,
the
other thing is when...
thinking about it as a young person, if you start really, really thinking about it, then you lose any kind of faith that you ever had, however strong it was or even weak.
Right.
I think if you truly start thinking about it, it's over.
The thing was, in practice, when you did finally go out in the world to college and things like that, how many objectivists did you meet? Not so many. I think it's a lot easier to meet objectivists now, especially with Facebook,
social
the internet,
media.
And everything. Social media helps. But you could be lost on a huge college campus, and there's only so many that you meet. And what was the alternative? I remember the liberal, amoral students, and then the conservative who were supposedly moral.
They didn't reject God. They rejected morality, those leftists. That's what they reject, fundamentally.
Probably.
That is. In a lot of ways. I mean, they can pretend that they have a morality and they like to speak in that language, but they're not. They are. It is
truly a minority of people still, unfortunately, who know that there is a morality apart from God. It's based on human nature, and it is objective. It is absolute in the sense of that it tells you what is right and wrong within a context, of course, but you know it has principles. It is principled.
Well, people can't get
virtues.
People can't divorce. I mean, it's like they think morality without God. What does that mean? A lot of people, you know, when I was thinking about these things when I was young, I was like, well, you know, I knew morality was important. The idea of God, whatever, you know, whatever it was. But when you get older, again, when you start thinking about it, if you take morality seriously, it's something that Rand's work, I think, really, really makes it clear to you that morality, divorced from reality, is the true morality. I mean, it's a morality based in reality.
Yeah.
It's not based on some
supernatural being from above. Of course, when I was 12, I knew nothing about Rand, unfortunately, but what I did know is I didn't believe in religion and that I did think it was important to be a good person. And what did I define being a good person as at the time? I defined it in just pretty funny ways. I did associate it with using my mind. And because I did associate it with using my mind, I rejected drugs. Because that was a big topic among, you know, teenagers, was using drugs and alcohol. Right. And they bring it up in school too, you know, to just say no and all that stuff. So don't use drugs. Use your mind. Be honest and be just.
Be honest.
I think kids get a good sense of just and unjust when they're young as well.
Locking in onto the truth. I mean, that was so important. So important. The truth, recognizing it, expressing it. That really trumped so many things.
So I think as a child, those were the big things for me.
And I think that you know, interest in the truth will naturally lead you away from that, from religion, from God, from all that.
Yeah. Anyway, I just really particularly wanted to paint that picture of women who are told by people like Rick Santorum and all of these religious right people that their choice is, and especially after a certain age, don't have sex, because if you do, you will risk not only getting pregnant, but have a high risk of bringing into the world children who are retarded, who are suffering, who might even die during childbirth. All of these horrible, horrific things will happen needlessly because they have this weird idea that they can ban contraception because they think that so-called life begins at conception. You know, life-like processes begin at conception, but human life doesn't start until it actually starts becoming more like a human being, which is much later during a pregnancy. And moreover, rights don't start until you have an individual. So they have no basis, again, going back to a proper function of government, which is to protect individual rights, they have no basis telling women what they can do with their bodies with respect to their reproductive capacities. It's pure unadulterated evil. It is this attack on sex, which is a good thing that, you know, adds tremendously to life. And I'm not going to, you know, go on and talk a lot about sex on the show, but it is a tremendous value. It's a celebration of life. And for these people to declare it as evil and to make it impossible for people to enjoy without worrying about bringing retarded children into the world, it's so disgusting.
You know, the people who hear the term retarded, they'll be offended and they're going to call in. And
are they?
Yeah.
So what am I supposed to say?
I'm joking.
What's the word I'm supposed to say, Deborah?
No, I mean mentally retarded.
I don't know. Disabled, maybe?
Mentally
disabled, mentally challenged.
I don't think there's anything wrong with what you said.
I'm joking. I just want to...
It should only be that Santorum calls
this
show and I can
tell him. That word has been rejected. I mean, where do you hear it anymore? The term, retarded. You just don't. You hear it, and I think kids calling it, you're retarded and all that, but... In terms of an actual term that's used, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it fits a retarded mind, a retarded body. And
Any more thoughts on our friend Deborah?
Just that, you know, I think that it's all related. I think that the attack on pornography and the attack on contraception and abortion, it's all, it kind of seems like an attack on sex and, you know, and on just on people's ability to enjoy their life.
Uh-huh. Pleasure is evil. And, you know, for him to bring down, you know, Mark Levin, it's sad, you know, because he has been a good voice. But that's just pathetic. It's pathetic for him to stand up for him. It really is.
Yeah, well, but now we have Boss and Amy who are better than Marco Ben.
We have the same audience, right?
Yeah, that's right. We have the same exact audience is hanging out with us right now. Awesomeness. Well, thank you, Deborah. And we will continue on and maybe call in later when we talk about the executive order. I'm sure that's going to make you thrilled. Okay. So, I don't know. Santorum, you're out. We don't want to talk about you anymore. That is about as ridiculous as it gets that he's going to go after internet pornography. He'll never do it anyway. I mean, he can try to eradicate all that stuff, all the different ways that people on the internet find to get around stuff, ways that they can, you know, implant viruses. They're so creative.
Richard S. says, if we're going to use the obnoxious right term of war on X, I say it's a war on happiness.
A war on
and
happiness,
you know what?
Yeah.
I mean, when he says, Santorum literally says, this pursuit of happiness, he had a sour puss face. Remember that? He was offended by the idea because in his mind, happiness is doing things that you feel like that make you feel good. So, I mean, think about the kind of existence he lives if he's consciously anti-happiness. I mean, wow.
I don't see how his wife can have a smile on her face in any of the part in
well,
the pictures.
Well, it doesn't really have.
Yeah. Zach has in the chat room repeated a pun that I heard
that, you
earlier.
You know what? It X'd my mind, and I X'd it out recently. And then Martin said it the other day, and now.
And the pun is?
Rick Santorum.
Rick Santorum.
I thought about it. I said, well, you know.
Yeah. Now, some people are talking about the fact that they wouldn't really do evil things without God, but this Kantian mindset is ingrained in people so that they think they would do so without God. Okay, that's probably true. But the other thing is that Kant has done a good job of secularizing the religious viewpoint to make everybody feel guilty for any action that they do out of either what is, and this is Kant. Kant says, if you do anything out of self-interest or inclination, which would be because you enjoy it, it's something that gives you pleasure.
That, yeah.
If you do it out of self-interest or inclination, that it is either immoral or at best that action counts as amoral.
Right.
That the entire morality is based on doing things out of the proper motive being duty.
Right.
Where the motive of duty is sufficient to determine your action.
Have you ever heard
people
don't say, well, if God wasn't here...
Oh, yeah, no,
I've
heard a number of people
do
that.
It's like,
and,
really?
And that is particularly true among people who consider themselves saved,
yeah.
Born again, right? They were involved in horrible things, drug addiction,
and then
total
what,
promiscuity,
whatever. The moral atheist
whatever.
Is the ultimate reproach to these people, though, because they can't believe it. They can't wrap their minds around this. This guy's moral atheist, it doesn't make sense to me. And that's why they get so offended sometimes by this, especially if they're moral atheists, because they have no argument against them. So, wait, you're good because what? I'm good because I have a leash. Invisible leash around my neck. Why are you good?
Because you have your own leash.
That's, that's right. It's because you have your own leash. And yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
To put the shorthand here, Martin says Kant secularized duty, but the way he thought of duty has been absorbed by the religious people. Great. So there's cross-pollination and a vicious circle among religious people and Kantians. It's perfect. And, of course, the other problem with anyone who is very religious is that that person is not going to have any argument at all against the leftists who say that you are your brother's keeper, and so
nothing,
therefore
zero, right.
We need Obamacare and all the other entitlement programs.
They're impotent.
Obama has been using those types of arguments.
He even used Jesus
to his
as
advantage.
An example,
yeah,
you know,
Jesus,
for
Jesus is an example. Yeah, exactly. So that was our first most pleasant story of the day. Now, the second story that I want to talk about was the death toll in Afghanistan recently, and it's something that hasn't really been discussed very prominently. We found the story on Jihad Watch, although it actually was publicized in the Associated Press on March 16th. It says an Afghan soldier was shot to death. It was a 22-year-old Marine. He shot to death a 22-year-old Marine at an outpost in southwestern Afghanistan last month in a previously undisclosed case of apparent Afghan treachery that marked at least the seventh killing of an American military member by his supposed ally in the past 6 weeks.
One was shot in the head right behind. He walked by the guy and the guy just shot him in the head.
Yeah. So in six weeks in Afghanistan, we have had Afghan soldiers who were supposedly our allies working alongside us in Afghanistan to effect this so-called transition that Obama wants. They have killed the Marines just in cold blood. They just used probably the guns we provided to them.
It was one Marine. It was military, I think, soldiers in general. A Marine the old days, someone else. So it was all mixed up.
Yeah, there's a list of all
but
the different
ones. But they're getting easy pickings because they're right there. And they do put their guard down because they're their quote-unquote allies. And as I put in this post, I put allies, all lies. It's all BS. And, you know, they're not – when they say that they're being treacherous, they're being Muslim. They're not being treacherous. They're being what Islam requires them to be.
You would say that they're being treacherous if
they were actual.
If they were people who could be expected to have some sort of loyalty.
Absolutely right, but they can't. It's impossible. Antithetical. I mean, they're fundamentally anti-life, anti-American, anti. So, but you know what? But they will use our military when it comes to finding out how to fight us, because we're teaching them how to fight us.
Yeah.
Because we're idiots. We're teaching them how to fight us. We give them arms. We give them training, military training.
The story that I'm looking at is from Jihad Watch. The headline is Afghan Jihadi Soldier Murdered Marine on February 1st. Pentagon lied about cause of death.
Yes, they did.
So listen to this. So it says Lance Corporal Edward J. Dykus of Greenville, Mississippi, was shot in the back of the head on February 1st while standing guard at an Afghan U.S. base in the Marja district of the Helmand province. The exact circumstances have not been disclosed, but the Dykus family has been notified that he was killed by an Afghan soldier. Marine officials discussed the matter on condition of anonymity because it is still under investigation. Now, here's the key paragraph. When the Pentagon announced Dykus' death the day after the shooting, it said he died, quote, while conducting combat operations, end quote, in Helmand. It made no mention of treachery, which has become a growing problem for U.S. and allied forces as they work closely with the Afghan forces to wind down the war.
I mean, the only reason our military, the only reason our government is in these countries is to placate us, to say, well, look, we're doing something. That's it. They're not here to fight the war. They're not here to fight the enemy. They're not here to do anything. And one guy said, actually, I don't know if he says it here, but he says, building relationships. That's the purpose. Why
oh, yeah.
There.
No, this goes on later. So, we're going to talk about this because this is the whole thing. Supposedly, they're moving into some sort of phase of the so-called Afghan war, the war in Afghanistan, which has gone on and on and on.
Why are we there? Why are we there?
I mean, we were originally there because the Taliban was harboring Osama bin Laden. But clearly we know that Osama bin Laden hadn't been there for years.
And now we're dealing with the Taliban. Actually, the Obama administration
is
talking.
You know, that was the we were talking with the Taliban. And then after that one U.S. soldier went on the rampage
and
shot 16. Listen to this. The Taliban walked out on talks with us.
They walked out.
Yeah.
They're better than us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're superior.
We are compromised.
They walked out on talks with us.
Well, they have, you know, what they have that we don't have is moral wretchedness. You know, the moral wretchedness of evil. They've got the moral wretchedness. We don't know what the hell we have. We have Obama.
Now it says, the victim of various shootings sometimes aren't even identified. And then they talk about we have this role. We're stepping back from a direct combat role in Helmand and other areas of Afghanistan to a new mission of advising and assisting Afghan soldiers and police. And it says that role, which is in full swing in Helmand, puts U.S. and other NATO troops in closer contact with the Afghans at a time when tensions between the two sides have been heightened by an American soldier's alleged killing Sunday of 16 Afghan civilians. And then here's the quotation from Tulin. And who is Tulin?
A Pentagon official, I think, or not?
Yeah, I think so.
Major General John Tulin, top Marine commander in Afghanistan.
Yes, yeah, so he's the top Marine commander of Afghanistan. This is what he says. He says, quote, "The Marines and soldiers that are doing the advising work out here understand that if they can't live side by side and operate day in and day out with the Afghans, then they are not going to be able to achieve what they need to achieve as far as relationship building."
Relationship end building.
Quote. So we're supposed to build relationships with the Afghanis, who are at least probably sympathetic with the Taliban, who have harbored Al-Qaeda leaders and other terrorists and themselves have engaged in horrible acts.
And the only reason that they didn't celebrate 9/11 is because they couldn't see it or hear it on radio or news or anything. They couldn't watch on television because they were in the cave. So that's the only reason that they didn't celebrate 9/11. This is an outrage of outrages. I mean, and it's going to continue. It's going to get worse.
I don't know. And, I mean, one thing that is good, Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch, after putting that quotation from Tulin about the relationship building and we're not going to be able to achieve what they need to achieve, blah, blah, blah. So Robert says, right, so get the troops out of there. And
right.
That's exactly the right answer. They need to get out now. Now, before anybody else gets killed over there. You know, it goes back just a few weeks ago, we had the Quran burning.
Yeah.
Our people, our soldiers, the guards at Guantanamo, whoever, had to burn the Qurans because
they had messages.
Because they were using the Qurans to give messages to each other to further their terrorist activity.
And they're going
to
pay a price for it.
So then we apologize all over ourselves for burning their Qurans.
We're going to hold them accountable, these soldiers who had to do this.
So we apologize all over ourselves. Then, of course, because we have no moral righteousness at all, our troops get killed over there because they have all these riots and blah, blah, blah. Why didn't our president explain we had to burn those Qurans because you guys were using them?
Because in his mind, there's no good reason to burn Qurans. It's evil. And that's that. He hasn't burned his Quran.
If you go to the story on Jihad Watch, you can read more about the various soldiers who were killed and in the, you know, for instance, they have another case. Two U.S. soldiers were gunned down by an Afghan soldier February 23rd in Nangarhar province. An Air Force lieutenant colonel and an army major were killed inside the Afghan government office in Kabul. And two army paratroopers were killed by Afghan soldiers in Kandahar province on March 1st.
And no one's going to pay for this.
And listen to this. It says, in none of these cases did the Pentagon's casualty announcement mention that the Americans were killed by their supposed Afghan allies. And you wonder, right, when all of this is going on and the Pentagon doesn't even announce that they were killed. Imagine being a soldier over there and hearing that the Pentagon is not even telling the truth.
The whole, yeah.
Do you start to understand why somebody would flip out and lose it?
Yes. I mean, look, the fact is, in 10 years of being used and abused by our government, going there, being told by Bush to go house to house, don't worry about it, just going there and getting their heads blown off if they go house to house looking for terrorists instead of bombing, you know, areas where they know that the terrorists are. These guys, one or two of them will eventually go crazy, snap. It's going to happen. It is what it is.
Now, it's not that I condone
of course,
the guy
I don't,
snapping
you don't,
and doing
no
these
one
things.
Rational does, but this is a freak happening here.
Yeah.
The enemy does this every single day.
And they do it
every
deliberately.
Every single day, deliberately, constantly targeting civilians, whether it's us, whether it's...
Well, and targeting us, too. And targeting civilians, yes.
They flew planes into buildings to kill as many civilians as they could. They thought that they would get 100,000. The buildings would topple over, you know, others. And they're just not equipped to deal with it. You need a moral code to deal with these guys. And, you know, who's in charge of the war? The most immoral scum in our country.
They all gathered
in Washington.
The other thing you need to understand is that the moral code that is governing the military is this so-called just war theory, by which we are supposed to show restraint.
While they fly planes into buildings.
Mm-hmm.
While they cut heads off.
That, you know, if we are pursuing our own self-interest, that that's evil, that the types of missions that we're supposed to be doing are ones that are going to make their country better in addition. I mean, we're supposed to feel guilty for having as a primary interest our own security.
Right. Absolutely right.
And so everything that we've been doing in these countries, in Iraq and otherwise, right? I mean, we learned what freeing Iraq got us the other week when we were talking about the killings of the emo
16
teens.
Yeah, kids
16-year-olds.
Murdered, butchered because they look Western.
So in Iraq, they're doing that. In Afghanistan, we're still over there. We're supposedly working alongside them, and we're getting killed.
You can't make them civilized. You know, again, the only way you make them civilized is you pull a Germany and a Japan on them.
So it goes back to just war theory, and behind that, the ethics of altruism, the idea that the moral is putting the other above yourself, the interests of other people come first.
Right.
You can only pursue your own self-interest, if at all, as a side issue alongside trying to do things for other people.
And our response to all these atrocities, whether it's a single atrocity with one soldier murdered or thousands of us on one day,
Continue.
Yeah.
No? Okay. So the other issue that just, I mean, really blows my mind is the issue of the Pentagon being deceptive about this. That they are so set on telling us that the mission is succeeding in Afghanistan that they will release a casualty report that doesn't tell the actual situation and cause of death of
the
soldiers.
You know what? I want to hear about the bereaved, the family of these soldiers. I want to hear from them. We need to hear from them on major talk shows. We need to hear from them. Radio shows, talk shows, they need to write books. They need to get out there. Because this is, imagine the pain that these people are feeling. Not only are their children being sent to hell, but not being allowed to take out the devils at all
and,
for political reasons.
And the other types of things that they do now, right? So what is it that we do? We are so concerned about saving face for the Afghanis, too.
Right, exactly right. Because Islam means peace, therefore Muslims are peaceful, therefore this, that, and therefore they can't release this news.
Right.
Because if it does, it'll have a trickle-down effect. Wait a minute. These are not the Taliban. They're just Muslims here. And if these Muslims are murdering us, then what does that say about Islam? And then, and so on. So therefore, let's not mention it.
Right, right. And there's a passage here in the article. It says, the Afghan government has been embarrassed by recent cases of Afghan soldiers turning their guns on their supposed partners.
Embarrassed.
So I think part of the Pentagon's effort is to try to cover up for their feelings, make it so they're not so embarrassed.
I don't know. Every so often, it seems like every week you get just a bigger outrage than the last.
Right.
And again, a part of our lack of response is the fact that a lot of us think we deserve this. You know, when you don't nuke a country after 9/11 and 2,000 Americans are murdered, a part of you feels you deserved it. If you don't do that,
I don't know. I feel terrible for people who are honest people who want to join the military, fight on behalf of the United States, fight on behalf of their values, and they're sent over there and they are forced to act according to the morality of just war theory, i.e. the morality of altruism.
And to respect the evil morality of Islam.
You know, and this is part of the problem, too. People have always characterized loosely going into the military as a sacrifice.
Right.
And if you think about it properly, being in the military should not be a sacrifice.
No.
You go into the military knowing that there are certain risks, but that preserving your country, making your family and those you care about safe against an enemy who is threatening your country, that is of higher value to you than the calculated
Absolutely.
Amount of risk that you're being asked to take. But what has happened under just war theory is that soldiers are being asked to take on more and more risk.
You're being asked to die, more or less.
Yeah.
You're being asked to sacrifice their lives. Like, we're sending you to die, but it's a good cause. And you're a hero, right? I mean,
And you believe in sacrifice,
you believe, right? Because that's why you're here.
Yeah. And so they are literally now asking soldiers to give up a higher value for a lesser value. Whereas in the past, under previous rules of engagement, yes, there's always been a risk of death going into the military, but the focus has been on, again, you know, and this is what Yaron Brook and Alex Epstein said in the article Just War Theory versus American Self-Defense years ago, that our policy has been to eliminate whatever threat against us as quickly as possible with minimal loss of life on our side, including our military. And we have in the past at least, valued our military members as higher than their civilians. And that's what has, you know, led us in the past to make decisions like carpet bombing of Dresden, dropping nuclear weapons on...
With full moral authority, Nagasaki, doing it with no guilt, no nothing, because we forget about, you know, besides the point that we had to make them pay for what they did, we had to end them and their threat.
Yeah, and the problem is just war theory is taught not only every military institution in our country. It is the unquestioned morality.
They have poisoned these.
In the military academies.
I mean, think about it. Think about these individuals.
Well, so let me finish.
They still believe in the country.
Yeah, but it's taught not only there, but it is being exported to all the major Western militaries around the world, basically anybody who will listen to it. And what's even worse is, as far as I can tell, the militaries in the other countries will listen to lectures on just war theory as somehow giving them the secrets to how the American military was successful back when it used to be successful and proud and strong.
Right.
That they think that somehow just war theory is compatible with the victories that we had in World War II, for example.
Right, in their mind, right. But that's not the case.
And it's not, as we're seeing now. This news story right here, I mean, how pathetic is it that we have, you know, sunk to the level where our mission is being defined as training Afghan soldiers to supposedly make their country free and self-sufficient, when I think most rational people would say that there's no hope of that occurring. Once we're out of there, there's nothing. And in the process, they're supposed to work side by side with these people and try to build relationships with them.
Clearly, they
hate us,
yes,
right?
They despise us by the nature of what of their religion, of their beliefs. Zach says, my just war theory, you attack me, you die. And as Pigman says, his foreign policy.
Yeah.
It's all in big letters. I have it. You F with us, you're effed. You kill my people, I kill yours. You destroy our icons, I destroy yours. And so on. And it's like, okay, if we made them pay for what they've done for the last 20, 30 years, they would be done. There would be no war. But we never have, which is why they keep coming for us. You know, death by a thousand cuts. This is what they do. They're little rats. They can't destroy us. They can't. If they had our power, everyone out there, if they had our power, you know, need I say more?
Well, and they may have our power soon with Iran, which is a really scary, scary prospect. I think we've got enough on this.
Ozu says last 200 years, true. You know, you could argue last 1400 years, but yeah.
Right.
Regarding America, because Thomas Jefferson took out the Muslim pirates in the Barbary Wars.
Now, Robert, a different Robert Cons in the chat room here says, joining the military today is the desire of suicide.
I mean, it's
that quote.
I feel terrible that I can't even get angry about that and say, hey, to defend it. But you know what? The way we're going, the way we are mistreating our soldiers who are willingly fighting for the country that they believe is still great. This is tragic beyond belief.
The other thing that happened that was a moral outrage to me, and again, this goes along the lines of making sacrifices for the sake of the feelings of the Afghanis, to avoid feelings of embarrassment for the Afghanis.
Right.
Recently, Leon Panetta, it was after the shooting, right? Leon Panetta goes over there to visit, and surprise, surprise, one of the Afghanis with whom we were working alongside, blah, 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 letting them use our equipment, used some of our equipment, a Jeep and something else, I don't know what, to try to make a run at the plane on which Leon Panetta was arriving. you know, drives onto the runway and there's some explosives and I don't know. They ended up catching this guy. Probably we turned them back over to the Afghan government because we want to, of course, avoid embarrassment, right? So Panetta is getting this warm welcome from the Afghanis where he's nearly attacked and killed. And so at the briefing, he's going to go brief both, I guess, Marines, right? It was the Marines.
Right. I believe
plus
that.
Afghanis that work alongside the Marines. The Afghanis had, I guess, already been told that they would be disarmed during this briefing. So at least Leon Panetta, I mean, I guess that's pretty hypocritical of him because he expects a number of situations in which the Marines under him are vulnerable to attack from the Afghanis.
Exactly right.
But when he's going to speak in front of these people, he insists that they're disarmed, of course.
And
right?
What was the reason?
And
they said, well, we asked the Afghanis to do
well,
that.
Well, right, so. No. So then, yeah, that was the point. So now, in addition to the Afghanis being disarmed, they forced, for the first time in history,
ever,
a military unit of Marines to be disarmed when they've got Leon Panetta, Secretary of Defense.
The first thing shot to my mind. The first thing that shot to my mind was this: our military has been so abused by Washington, so terribly abused, that they're afraid that they may turn on them. Now, this is just the first thing that shot to my mind, whether it's true or not. They've been so abused; it's unbelievable. So used for their disgusting, morally vain policies that they're like, well, you know, let's make sure that they can't do anything if they want to. I mean, that's where it seems like that's where we're going now. You know, they've been mistreating them for less. I mean, who knows how many decades?
Really,
I read it
as consistent with the other actions that are discussed here in this article from Jihad Watch. They did it because they wanted to avoid any feelings of embarrassment or inferiority by the Afghans. The Afghans, of course, you know, moral relativism.
Yes.
Moral relativism.
And
they're just as good.
Says, yeah. Egalitarianism. And it's true. I mean, they're saying, well, they're good guys, we're good guys, let's all disarm.
Yeah.
There are no sides here. It's just, Osama bin Laden, a few gangs, right?
We've been there for over 10 years.
And Afghanistan.
I mean, allies by now because we've been there for so long. That's all there is to it.
They know how to think now. They know how to create things, right? The Afghanis?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
They know how to use their brain now because of us.
So again, those of you who recently joined us, we're discussing this article that I found on Jihad Watch from March 16th. Afghan jihadi soldier murdered a Marine on February 1st, and Pentagon lied about the cause of death. We have our government lying to us about what's going on over in Afghanistan.
We know they lie, but this is an outright, we know this exactly, that they deliberately lied about the death of this particular American soldier for reasons that they don't want, you know. Because, again, if they follow that, say, wait a minute, who killed us? The Taliban? No, he was just an Afghani Muslim. Why did he kill? And then they go further and they find out that the ideology behind that calls for our deaths and so on and so on. Therefore, let's not know that. Let's not release that.
Well, I mean, it's an election year, right? So we can't have anything that makes the Obama administration's policy or any of his goals. Didn't he promise to get out of Afghanistan?
Yes, he did. And also one thing, I mean, isn't this, I mean, they would have called for Bush's head if a soldier went AWOL and killed 16. But, of course, it's not Obama's fault. He just happened to be present during this time.
I've seen various, effigies and stuff of Obama burned
the Muslims,
over there.
Yeah, but they'll burn any American. As far as we're all infidels. It doesn't matter who. What I'm saying is about our media, the Obama media.
Oh, right.
You know.
Right, about the media itself.
Yeah.
Right.
They would have blamed, if it was a non-Democrat, forget about it. They would have burned his effigy, our media.
Speaking of the media, the one small positive thing in this story is that it's the Associated Press who inquired about this case and uncovered the truth about it.
Yeah, which is pretty shocking
because
they're in bed with the whole leftist agenda. But I mean, it's come to fruition in a lot of ways. The anti-military mentality of all these scum leftists for the last, I don't know how many decades, has finally come to the point where we are truly, truly, truly weakened, where we can't fight, we're impotent. This was their dream, because we are the problem of the world, and therefore now if we're impotent militarily, then we are no problem.
And here we are, where our main focus is relationship building. Good luck with that. Now, the tweet that you had, which was, how do you win the hearts and minds of people who have neither?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you know, Pigman says, you know, you break their hearts. So they have no minds, but you at least have a heart. You break their hearts. You don't win their hearts. We broke the hearts of the Japanese, of the Germans, and they chose civilization over the path they were taking. Why? Because we asked them to? Because we spoke to them? No, we bombed the hell out of them. They started the war. We ended it. And yeah. That's it.
Now, the one thing that I would disagree with you on, although it does make for good drama, when you say, okay, you destroy our icon, we'll destroy yours.
I know. I know.
Really, again, you know, you go back to what the standard
is. I'm a cartoonist.
Yeah, I know you're. I know you're a cartoonist, but you know, the focus again is on eliminating the.
But what I'm saying here, listen,
wait,
I know.
Let me finish.
If they knew we would do to them what they try to do to us, you understand what I'm saying? They would never ever do what they do to us.
Okay.
They would never flown buildings.
So if it's necessary to eliminate the threat,
absolutely.
Then fine. Because
of course.
You can
I
do
know.
Whatever.
It's not just we're not going on a side issue.
It's not a movie.
Of course. But
it's a war.
It is a comic book, and my comic book.
Okay.
No, something in chapter 2 of the Infidel, I deal with that. They do something, and Pigman does it right in return, in kind. And check it out.
Yeah, whenever it comes out, it'll
say weeks.
It'll come out
literally
eventually.
Weeks.
Literally weeks.
Literally
okay.
weeks.
Okay.
I'm late as it is. I'm sorry, everyone, but literally weeks.
Promise. Anyway, so keep this in mind that this is yet another thing that Obama is glossing over and lying to us about. When you pull the lever in November, when you feel bad for the ABO person, the anybody but Obama person that you have to vote for, you will feel better if you keep that in mind. Here is another thing.
I'm sorry, one second, please. Mm-hmm. Just Martin says something very true and very funny.
Sure.
Should we be building relations with organized crime too? I mean, why not, right?
I mean,
mafia.
You know.
Anyway.
I also, like I said, I love I don't love it. You think, you know, brother, you asked for it. But to have the Taliban walk out on negotiations with us.
Oh, my. I mean, talk about
we're too
bizarre
good for
world.
You.
Bizarre world.
Yeah.
There was a cartoon, if you could just tell me just one second. It was Obama apologizing to the Afghanis apologizing to Muslims for our building hitting their planes or what was it?
Not oh, even. Yeah.
It was a brilliant cartoon.
Wasn't that the one that Sunny Loman
posted? Did she draw
it? I'm not sure if she drew it.
It was,
House of Sunny, she posted
it. What was it again? It was he apologized to the Afghanis for our buildings
hitting their planes
and killing 19
of
them.
Their, yeah.
It's brilliant. It's sick.
And that's really what we've been reduced to. And again, it's all thanks to just war theory, which started
unjust war theory
in the early 70s or so, and it is just completely dominated the military academy. So if anybody wants to go help to clean that up, that would be nice.
One last thing. Virtue says to Martin about that comment about hooking up with organized crime. He goes, no, because organized crime competes with the power of politicians, and they won't share. Absolutely right. you know, when I say politicians and criminals, but I repeat myself.
They're having a good time in the chat room.
Okay,
so.
I'm done.
Aww. DBS is out of here, so she is going to avoid being outraged by the following story, which I think she's already probably heard about, which who hasn't? I've just got Yahoo News, plain old Yahoo News story. The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, is that the name?
Yeah, right, yeah.
That is the acronym.
Yes.
Obamacare price tag shifts from $940 billion, which is what we were promised, to $1.76 trillion. Which means it has nearly doubled the
I think it's the first time in history that a program has cost more than they projected, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Totally unprecedented.
Yeah.
Never happened
historically
before.
Historically speaking, before. Yeah.
Medicare, Medicaid,
no.
All so much cheaper than they initially projected.
Yes.
Such a smaller part of the budget.
Yes.
Social Security.
First time ever.
You know. Oh.
And Islamic peace.
Yeah. That's right. So this is published Wednesday, March 14th. President Obama's landmark health care overhaul is projected to cost $1.76 trillion over a decade, reports the Congressional Budget Office.
He lied?
Imagine that. A hefty sum more than the $940 billion estimated when the health care legislation was signed into law. And remember, at the time, the whole focus was on let's make it less than $1 trillion. It's got to be, as
exactly.
long as it comes in less than $1 trillion, but hey, it's a bargain
right.
because I mean, as it is, they're just playing with other people's money and not, you
they
know,
can give
it,
rats,
it's all monopoly money to them anyway.
Absolutely
it's not
right.
real money.
Absolutely
but
right.
As long as, you know, psychologically it looks like it comes in less than $1 trillion, then it's great. Now, as we learn more about what the legislation is actually going to cost, you know, as it's put into place, we learn $1.76 trillion. So it's an $820 billion difference.
And it'll probably be more than that. It'll be $2 trillion, $3
trillion. If we look back at Obama's September 2009 remarks to the joint session of Congress, Obama asserted the following, quote, "Now, add it all up, and the plan I'm proposing will cost around $900 billion over 10 years, less than we have spent on the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and less than the tax cuts for the wealthiest few Americans that Congress passed at the beginning of the previous administration," end quote. So, you know, I want to rail, of course, on Obama again for this idea that they are spending money to give you a tax cut.
They're wasting their money.
No, but the point is they're not even wasting.
Of course, of course.
It's not their money.
Of course, but in their mind, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, man, by not taking all we got, they're giving us a break.
Yeah. We're spending money by letting you keep more of your own. Awesome. When the final CBO report was released before the law's passage, critics surmised that the actual 10-year cost would far exceed the advertised projections. In other words, the numbers were seemingly obscured through a political ploy devised to jam the legislation through Congress. Quote, "Democrats employed many accounting tricks when they were pushing through the national health care legislation," asserted Philip Klein of the Washington Examiner. Continuing, "the most egregious of which was to delay full implementation of the law until 2014, end quote. Yeah, and that's the thing.
Right.
It's 2014 that this kicks into place.
Right.
And at that point,
that
Obama is safely in his second term,
right,
turning us into a total leftist dictatorship.
And,
right?
and going for a third term.
Oh, yeah, because, of course, he's going to accrue to himself all sorts of powers to suspend elections and whatever else, right? Says, "This accounting maneuver allowed analysts to cloak the true cost of Obamacare, making the law appear less expensive." Then it says, who's this quote? This is from The Hill. The Hill is reporting instead, quote, "President Obama's health care reform law coverage provisions will cost less, but instead cover fewer people than first thought," The Hill reported. So now they're saying that 2 million fewer people will actually acquire health care coverage by 2016 than Obama promised. So probably it's going to cost more and cover less. I think the worst part of it is the number of people who will lose their insurance policies,
right,
and be forced into government policies.
Which was always their plan.
Yeah. So this is also worth, this is Klein again, Philip Klein. He says, "It's also worth noting that we were told time and again during the health care debate that the law didn't represent a government takeover of health care. But by 2022, according to the CBO, 3 million fewer people will have health insurance through their employer, while 17 million Americans will be added to Medicaid, and 22 million will be getting coverage through the so-called government-run exchanges," end quote. So what's the population of the United States now?
300 plus.
Almost 400 million?
No, less than that, 300, a little over 300 million.
A little over 300. So we've got 22 million in the government-run exchanges. 17 million will be added to Medicaid over the ones who are already there now, and 3 million are being kicked out of insurance from their employer because, of course, Obamacare is making it too expensive. So you're going to have all of these millions of people in the government health system, and any insurance that is through these government-run exchanges, you can bet is going to have rationing imposed, right?
Right.
They have these IPAB boards, I forget what they are.
The idea is that we're all the same. I mean, there's a communist mentality here.
Yeah. And there is, of course, this huge database being created as we speak because it was part of one of the first TARP bailout programs. They have this huge database. They are going to put all of your health data, all of the treatments that you've had, the conditions that you've had.
In the government's hands.
Forget your privacy. It's all going to be in this huge nationwide healthcare database. They're going to use this database to evaluate the so-called success and failure of types of treatments and tests and things like that to decide whether it's, quote, worth spending money on that treatment. And if the government, this IPAB board, I think it's something patient advisory board, I forget
sounds,
what the I
yeah,
was,
sounds right.
But their purpose of this board is to decide what treatments make financial sense overall using statistics. So you are going to become just a statistic.
You know,
and if you happen to be a different kind of person, you know, Avastin, or I forget the name of the drug that was the breast cancer drug.
I think so. That sounds right.
I think the name is close to that, but not exactly. But the whole point is that drug will help a minority of people tremendously. It will have bad side effects for others. So statistically, overall, the government would like to deny people this drug, but for some people, it could do a lot of good. Instead of allowing people to make these decisions as individuals, if you push them into government-regulated and run insurance programs, whether it's Medicaid or these government, independent payment advisory board.
Sam writes.
So if you shove them into this program, the programs are going to tell you, you can get this, you can't get that. And as time goes on, you're not going to even be allowed to spend your own money on these treatments. Or maybe the treatments just won't be available because so many people will be in the government-run insurance programs that it's going to be prohibitively expensive to even maintain the machinery or the ability.
A totalitarian America is coming soon after, because this is – You know the little phrase, if you don't have your health, you have nothing. Well, they want our health. We will have nothing. Ultimately, this is their goal. They are evil scum, and the idiots in the country have allowed this to happen. Idiot Bush leading to an Obama presidency with idiots voting for him, and those who will still vote for him. But I don't think this guy can get away with it again. I just don't think so. If he does, we are finished. As a country, we are. His whole goal was to destroy us, I mean, to bring us down. And one of our friends was saying, the goal is to make us equal with all the rest of the world. And, to an extent, meaning we're destroyed.
Right. At the end of this month, the Supreme Court begins hearing the arguments in the challenges to the Obamacare legislation.
So the freedom of the country will be dependent on those individuals.
There's been weird articles. Like there was a Washington Post one, and I didn't even go look at it because I knew it would just make me throw up probably. But it was something like how conservative justices can save Obamacare. And they're basically trying to put arguments in their mouth, as far as I could tell.
Well, moral arguments, religious arguments.
To say how you can rule in favor of saving this disgusting piece of legislation. If Obamacare is upheld, I agree with them. Again, I've talked about the arguments, the constitutional arguments against the Obamacare legislation in the past, and I have complained about the fact that some of them sound so technical, that your rights hang in the balance on this thread of this little technicality, this legal technicality.
Right.
That's not true of all the arguments. Some of them are fairly fundamental, but the most basic argument is, look, if we are a limited government, if we have a country with a limited government, we have a republic that is supposed to have a federal government of limited powers. They're saying that if this legislation is upheld, that there is practically nothing that the government cannot do under the guise of regulating interstate commerce or doing whatever is, quote, necessary and proper to regulate interstate commerce. And I agree, that's completely right. Somebody joked that the next thing that they're going to make you buy is the Chevy Volt.
Yeah, but once they do this to us, they figure if they can get away with this, that's it. We're done.
If they can force you to buy health
tools.
Insurance,
that's it. We serve them.
And it is such a mess. And we have, I think, so few people, although I think the argument of getting government out of healthcare, the idea of getting government out of healthcare is starting to gain traction. But I think the people who embrace it in a truly principled way are gone, because people do believe that healthcare is a right.
Right.
They think that you have a right to healthcare. And
public schools have taught them this,
Well, not only public schools, but, I watched on PJTV, they have the video up on YouTube from this last Friday, Yaron Brook and Terry Jones are on with Alan Barton on that little show called Front Page that they do. And they did a segment on this. And one interesting angle that they took was they said, well, look, because of the way that the government has pushed the healthcare industry into basically having you think that, oh, yeah, the employer is supposed to give me health insurance.
Right.
It's not really my responsibility to think about my health care. It's my employer's responsibility. Or, you know,
well, that's the reality. Through school, through religion, through altruism, through all this crap, it's entire culture that this is where we end up.
Yeah. You know. The health care is not the individual's responsibility or focus, but it's
and
somebody else's.
Even non-leftists believe that. Even non-leftists believe that. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Which is, that's why we are in the mess that we are in.
And apparently it came about because there was price and wage fixing at the time. And so that the only way that employers could compete with each other to try to get a good employee to work for them was by offering them better benefits.
Right.
So then they'd start to offer the types of healthcare plans that would cover everything.
Right.
And I like the way Alan Barton put it because he says it's like a bumper-to-bumper warranty on your body.
Hmm.
That's how people think of their health care, as opposed to, I think, on a in a truly free market where they were, where there weren't these government distortions put in place, right? People would treat health insurance like any other type of insurance, that you would buy a catastrophic policy, you would pay out of pocket for all of your routine medical expenses, and your insurance would just be that insurance. Against something that was a big, unexpected, you know, healthcare expense, and that's what I would do, you know, and that's the kind of thing that if I have choices of which health plan, if I have an employer or something, I try to choose the more free market type of options. You never choose an HMO because what's the incentive for an HMO? A health maintenance organization gets a set fee to care for you. You don't even have, in some cases, co-pays at all sometimes. And so their incentive is to give you as less, you know, as little care as possible and keep as much of the money as a bonus to them. I don't want that. I'd rather have something where, you know, maybe there's some negotiated deal if you're going to use provider doctors or things like that. So our thinking about healthcare is so messed up. The idea of getting government completely out of healthcare, the idea of not thinking of healthcare as a right that somebody is entitled to, you know,
is alien.
Is alien to people. So how are we going to, you know, succeed? And what are what's the Supreme Court going to do? I have no idea. I have no bet or prediction at all.
No, because we don't know what the hell these people will do. Ultimately, I mean, you mean this summer when they make that decision? When they, I mean, I don't know. It's not the given. Oh yeah, they'll take care of it. No,
there's going to be
won't.
there are going to be
for it to be come up to them. I mean, this is just, I don't know.
Well, I'm glad it got there as quickly as it did.
Of course, but still, it has to be destroyed. It has to be wiped out now, soon. It will kill us as a country. I mean, the country will need you know, healthcare.
One of the stories that I saw this week was that I think Obama wrote an executive order or just. Started some things in motion to tell the states how they can start pushing more people into the federal programs, Medicaid or whatever.
This guy's the only thing you ever had to know about him was that he was friends with an unrepentant terrorist. Really, really. I mean, I will say it again and again. Is anyone listening here friends with an unrepentant terrorist? Do you understand what I'm saying? That kind of individual is evil, but he's not an outright terrorist. He won't blow things up outright. He will do it out in the open, sneakily, you know, backdoor, put on a smile, and that's what Bel Air saw. He saw this his chance. He said, "This guy's pretty slick. We can get him in the inside and destroy it from within." That's it.
And he seems to be acting consistently with that anyway. I mean, you know, again, this is going to cost...
This is a master plan.
This is going to cost nearly double. It's going to make people lose their insurance. It is going to infringe on our privacy. It is going to result in the rationing of healthcare. It's going to result in reduced innovation in the healthcare industry. So less cures for diseases and all this.
It's going to unmake us in every important way. And that's always been the goal. They've had a deep, hardcore hatred for the country. And they've had to flip into something that never was to destroy it. You know, when people say, well, he doesn't want to destroy it. Yeah, he wants it. That will destroy it. That's the whole point. If he turns into something he never was, it is destroyed.
And this goes into effect if they don't overturn it and if we don't elect somebody who will repeal it in 2014.
Romney has said he will repeal it. He has said he will repeal it. He has said he will repeal it.
Aren't there
he also enacted socialized medicine.
Aren't there a number of politicians who say, excuse me, that some of this has already started to take effect?
Right.
And, for instance, certain bureaucracies have already been set up and established, and that getting them out,
some of Romney's handlers said, you can't really repeal it. I mean, we know you really can't. Therefore, just keep telling them that you will. That way you might get elected.
I don't know. There's going to have to be such a change in thought process in our country to get us out of here. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, if people start thinking, I think we'll be okay. Yeah.
Pull up the story that you had on Paul Ryan and why isn't Paul Ryan?
We have spoken about this before, and we said, you know, the more decent politician in Washington, right? They have presidential ambitions, like Paul Ryan. He has presidential ambitions. Why isn't he running?
Right.
Does he want to run after the country is destroyed? He want to, you know, is that his ambition? Like, and that will bring it back from the dead. If that's his ambition, then he's, you know. Why aren't they running? The more decent politicians. They're being optimistic in a way where you shouldn't be optimistic. They're being Pollyannish. I mean, this is it. This window. To save us. And they're playing around. And he has presidential ambitions. So he's saying, well, 2016, you know. It's like he enters the world of, you know, I mean, the end of Planet of the Apes, if anyone knows. I don't want to ruin anything. But the end of Planet of the Apes, then he's going to swoop in and save it and save the day.
No problem, yeah. Andrew, who is, I think, new in the chat room here, he says, government health care is a potent means of achieving egalitarian ends.
Definitely is.
And he says that the way of thinking, in terms of thinking of your health care as something that is your individual responsibility, and thinking of health insurance as something that is truly insurance, that's supposed to be risk, you know, a method of dealing with risk and that you have it for catastrophic purposes, et cetera. He says that's an alien frame of mind all over the world. And I would agree. I mean, obviously, one of the reasons that I think some politicians were pressured into voting for Obamacare is that they were given the appeal to authority there's no civilized country in the Western world that doesn't have socialized medicine.
As if there are many Americas out there. As if we are just one of the countries in the world. As if America is not special. As if it's not the most powerful, freest nation in the history of the world. The greatest nation in the history of the world. As if. And of the stinking politician who can't argue that. They don't deserve to be in... They don't deserve to defend us. They don't deserve to be in that position.
The thing that I feel that someone like a Romney is doing right now is that he will say that he's for American exceptionalism, that he wants America to be strong. But he does not understand the things that made America unique and what it is at all. So someone like Paul Ryan, I think, does come closer to understanding that.
He is somewhat sympathetic to Ayn Rand's philosophy, to objectivism. He requires his, what do you call the people who work from the interns and the, to read Atlas Shrugged. He is more friendly to America than many politicians. And what's he waiting for?
Yeah.
He has presidential ambitions. And that's why, and I mean this when I say I question his patriotism. I do.
Yeah.
Because what are you waiting for?
Yeah. Where were you?
What are you waiting for?
That's what we're going to say to him. So here is a little article in National Review Online called The Corner. And it's just titled, Well, Why Isn't He Running for President? And it's about Paul Ryan. It's written by Michael Walsh. And he has this whole thing about, you know, why isn't he running? And Ryan said he's not a candidate during this cycle. But it seems to me there's a profound disconnect between what even the blandest of Rotary Club Republicans is saying about the coming election, most important in our lifetime, et cetera, and the current
slate. This is
slate,
truly the most important.
Yeah, the current slate of self-nominated candidates, only one of whom evinces even a glimmering understanding of what the GOP and the country is actually up against, and his moment passed away in Florida. I assume he's talking about Gingrich.
Yeah, I believe. I don't. Is that it?
That's what I think. So Then he says, instead, we got the front runner giving patriotic bromides, half exculpatory statements about the president, such as he's in over his head.
I'm sorry, one second. It seems like, and that's true, Romney seems like a true Democrat acting like a Republican. He doesn't know how to really do it. He doesn't know how to pull it off enough. That's all. Go on.
Just don't tell me too much about a Romney, because I'm in this, like, I want to have almost conscious evasion about Romney so that I can pull that lever in November.
He can't act Republican enough. He doesn't have it in him.
So Walsh goes on. He says that, you know, the front runner has these patriotic bromides, et cetera. And what happens is that, no, Obama is not in over his head, as Romney keeps saying. Barack Obama knows exactly what he's doing.
Yes.
And his goal is the fundamental transformation of America. And then Walsh says, exactly at the politically permissible speed.
Yes, yes.
And he says, should he win a second term, the brakes will be off, the inhibitions removed, and the true face of modern liberalism will be revealed, and it won't be a pretty sight.
Absolutely.
So then he goes in, this is why Ryan would be such a strong candidate. And
His reasons are pathetic. It's
So here's the reasons why Paul Ryan would be a strong
according to Walsh,
this writer at the National Review. First of all, he's a young Midwesterner.
What?
Yeah.
That's his reason?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alleged reason.
So he's a young Midwesterner, so it's another young Midwesterner, so that would be a good matchup.
Silly, unimportant, unessential, inessential, so whatever.
I don't know. I mean, maybe we're still in – I never think of candidates in regional terms.
It's some ideas.
But people still talk about them in regional terms. I don't care where Obama's from. I sort of care, but not really, right? But that, you know, that he's from the Midwest and
so
this
what?
Guy's from the – I don't care. Okay, then the second is, he says, Ryan is the antithesis of Obama, uncharismatic but compelling, smart instead of
credential. More charismatic than any of these candidates, but
serious instead of sneering, youthful but not immature.
Look, he has the right influence. He does cite Rand at times. He does. He does cite Atlas Shrugged. Rarely do politicians do that. If he has an ounce of influence from Rand in his life, he'll be better. Just by that alone.
But, I mean, listen to what he says. So he says, Ryan is uncharismatic but compelling versus Obama, who is charismatic.
I mean, charismatic to whom? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, I don't know. And then he says, Ryan is smart instead of credentialed. So I would agree that Obama's probably not that smart.
No, he's not.
But is Obama really credentialed?
No, he's not really. You're right.
I mean, he's got some paper credentials, at least that.
No, but they're all hidden. These important things that he did in college and what, you know, and his career as a teacher, they're all hidden. We don't know about them because they're so great that he doesn't want to share them.
But any of his post college or post law school
work,
there was nothing real.
And you suppose the first book, and this guy broke it down. He said that basically Bill Ayers wrote his first book. You know, he was waffling and waffling and waffling, and he went to him and he wrote it because he's allegedly a good writer, this terrorist.
He says, Ryan is serious instead of sneering. Okay, I would take that. But then he says, Ryan is youthful but not immature.
Whatever. I mean, these reasons are pathetic.
They're good reasons. They're non-essential. Ryan has distinguished himself as a congressman, blah, blah, blah. And then he says Ryan is unafraid of Obama and doesn't flinch when confronting him. Well, that's good.
Yeah, it is. But I've heard him use a little too much respect for Obama at times. He goes, I don't hate him. You know, I don't as a person. It's like he's destroying the country. You can say that. You can say that, and not be seen as a freak. Right. You don't just say I disagree with how he runs a country. No, that's too polite. We are not in a moment where we have to be polite about our enemies, which he's one.
So those are his reasons, right? He's another young Midwesterner. He's the opposite of Obama, the antithesis in various ways, and he's unafraid of Obama. These are the major reasons he thinks that Ryan is such the great candidate. How about Ryan is not in favor of Obamacare or anything like it, never had anything to do with passing it or anything like
that?
It?
How about that
he actually, compared to any other politician out there that might have presidential ambitions right now, he has a principled grasp of the proper function of government. Now, obviously, this is relative to the others.
He does enjoy Grant's work.
He has enough charisma to be electable. He can explain his viewpoints well and compellingly.
Particularly, he speaks fast. He knows his stuff.
So.
And again, I will repeat again and again. He's influenced by Rand to an extent.
What do you guys?
And he's open about it.
In the chat room, if you had to describe why Paul Ryan would be the good candidate to run,
would you give these reasons?
What reason would you give?
Because they're all compromised. They all are. He is. But we are at a point where we need to survive here. And he seems better than them. He does. And he's open about his interest in Rand's work.
I guess Walsh thinks that there's some chance that Ryan would step in because he says at the end here, with a spiteful Gingrich threatening chaos at the convention, the opportunity to step in might seem to be at hand. If this really is the most important election of our lifetime, an existential duel, it might behoove the Republicans to start acting like it.
Yes.
End quote. So that's the end.
Sure. And, you know, he will be, he can take him out. I mean, he probably could take out Obama. In debates, he probably could take him out in a lot of ways. And he will appeal to a lot of people. And I don't think he gives a damn for the social issues the way his Santorum does.
And
he's not cotton. He doesn't have the albatross of Romneycare around his neck.
Right. And you know he probably does have some of the beliefs on the social issues the same
way. Probably
does,
but he might keep it to himself.
And it certainly wouldn't be a priority for him. Any politician right now who knows that his job one is to – actually, he's going to have two jobs that are simultaneously equally important, I'm afraid, because it happens to be that we're at a lot of risk right now because of Iran. But simultaneously, keep the country safe and reduce the size and scope of government. Those are the two focuses that they have to have. That is a double full-time job for any serious politician.
And we can do it, though. We can do this. If we get a good people in power, we can truly, truly fix our problems. We can.
Yeah.
But we got evil people in power, and this is the result.
Someone asked me one time, and I mean, obviously I have no aspirations in this regard, would I be president, right? And I said, well, only if I could have, and I listed off all these people that would have to be in my cabinet because I would just have to surround myself with amazing people. And I know broad principles, but I would have to get, you know.
Right.
So we're talking, I'd have to have a John Bolton, a Peter Schiff, a Yaron Brook.
Right. Robert Spencer for an Islam czar.
You know. Robert Spencer.
Joking.
Who else would I have to have? Had we decided?
Well, me is a given, but go on.
Okay, go on. But the point is that your job would be to peel back all the layers of the onion. I see that your default strategy would be last in, first out.
Yes.
The last regulation, the last layer of regulation and taxation, whatever that was passed, should be the first ones you repeal. And, you know, on the idea that the reason we have more controls is because the earlier controls bred the later controls. So you just.
And prove that they are fundamentally against the country.
But to transition us from where we are to a government of its proper size and scope and do it in a way that is not unjust to people,
right.
That is your full focus. And this idea that you're going to go after internet porn, or you're going to work on banning contraception, or whatever.
It's shameful.
It's disgusting.
I call it political porn. That's what he's doing, Santorum. It's political porn.
Yeah. How can you do it without atheism? I think how do we get Ryan to run? I'm not sure. I'm losing the chat room discussion.
I know, but you know what,
though?
Ryan is watching all this. He knows that is. He has presidential ambitions, again. And he sees the clowns that are running against Obama. He's like, you know what? If I'm serious, you know, this is a test for him now. And do I want to run? Do I want to run where a country where we're finished? Or if I run, I can help save the country.
Maybe we should have a letter-writing campaign.
Tell me something. He just seems better. And again, if you cite someone and say that they're pretty good, of course, you're accused. You are endorsing him fully. We're not. Of course not. But when you got a guy who openly expresses an interest in Ayn Rand's work, her ideas, they can't help but make him better as a politician, to help his mind get these ideas, you know, better articulated to us. We need someone like that. Nobody running today has any inkling about what Ayn Rand's, you know, philosophy means. They don't. And if you ask them about it, they'll, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, who knows if they even read her work?
Well, the one who, I guess, purports to have some knowledge about Rand is Ron Paul.
Well.
But he's completely out now.
He disavows it, I think,
and
also.
Then
he disavows
any. Gary Johnson maybe knows some as well.
Maybe.
Neither of them has a.
Someone says, puts here, Spencer's not objectivist. Yeah, I know that. But he understands Islam, you know, as well as anyone in the country.
Oh, you would. And I don't think any. I mean, Schiff is not an objectivist, although I understand he's quite sympathetic.
Yes.
I never heard that he was an objectivist. Do you know what his status is?
I don't know. And Robert Spencer also, he has read some Rand. It appeals to him on some level, and he's when it comes to his issue, he's as good as it gets.
Yeah. You would just count on him for knowledge about Islam and the various
and
cultures.
The jihad.
He would be an advisor, as would Bolton.
Yes.
Bolton's not an objectivist,
no.
But he knows so much about foreign relations.
He's pissed me off. I mean, he talked about running, pulled out. I made a poster, which word got to him. He liked the poster, and he pulled out for what reason did he give?
I don't know.
They won't speak about foreign policy. Well, you speak about it, John. I mean, and then he endorses who? Mitt Romney. It's like that is the safest possible thing you could do. So, you know, he's lost. I mean, he lost appeal to me. Of course, Islam is BS, spaghettification, but
right.
I don't know what the point is.
I actually don't know that you would have to have a Robert Spencer in the cabinet in order to deal with the things that the way you had to. I mean, we know that these are bad, motivations.
Well,
for
I'm talking about, no, but think about it, the felt jihad going on in the country, care.
Well,
the
yeah, there'd be all that
he
going on.
He can take them
right.
on. You know, he can advise you to take them on in a way that they've never taken on before.
Well, and you'd have to figure out how to take them on in a way that would protect individual
right.
rights. You,
right.
A lot of the Patriot Act would have to go too.
Well, they are clear, you know, they are here to bring us down from within as well. And Obama has given them a free run.
I have another story that will just horrify and scandalize you, maybe, maybe not. I got the article first from examiner.com, and they portray it in very catastrophic terms. It said, Obama executive order would seize U.S. infrastructure, citizens for national defense. On Friday, Obama signed a sweeping executive order that would effectively nationalize everything, including food, water, and U.S. citizens, in order to prepare for national defense. Worse yet, the order would allow for a civilian draft, the conscription of persons of outstanding experience or ability, end quote, without compensation. And this, you know, is picking up off of somebody else's discussion. But I went to go look at the actual executive order, and it's called the National Defense Resources Preparedness Executive Order. I printed this thing out, and I just learned about it at 4 o'clock this afternoon. It is 15 pages long, and it reads like a piece of legislation. And I guess it purports to be an amendment of the National Defense Production Act of 1950. I can't even begin to go through the whole spectrum of this, but let me just give you a little bit of what it says. You know, Section 103 says general functions, and it says the executive departments and agencies who are responsible for plans and programs relating to national defense or for resources and services needed to support such plans and programs shall, and then it says, they shall be prepared to take the actions necessary to ensure the availability of adequate resources. So what does that mean? They're going to take actions, take actions that are necessary basically to ration things and to confiscate things out of the market so that we can't buy them because they need it for national defense requirements. Another sub-provision is they're going to foster cooperation between the defense and commercial sectors for research and development and for acquisition of materials, services, components, and equipment to enhance industrial base efficiency. So what does foster cooperation mean? Use government force to force people to cooperate, right?
Of course.
People are in the chat room are asking what I'm looking at. I'm looking at an executive order that I got from the whitehouse.gov website. right?
It's linked to from that piece.
And it's linked to from a piece on examiner.com. If you go to examiner.com and search Obama executive order, that would probably get you there. But if you go to whitehouse.gov and you look for the executive order that he signed on March 16th, then you'll also find it.
And how many people are reading this? You and maybe a few more, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know how many people are. Now,
no, but what I'm saying is that's their intent also. They know that we won't delve in. Look, people are so indifferent to this. Like, well, you know, every day we got these attacks on us.
Right. Now, there's something called the Defense Production Act Committee. And one of the things that it's going to do is actually let me get to a section that really got my goat here, because this is
it's long.
This is 15 pages long, right?
The whole language here is meant to
There's all these agencies who are delegated authority that the president used to have, right? And one, of course, is Department of Homeland Security is being delegated authority under this. So the secretary of each agency delegated authority under this section is going to establish standards and procedures by which the authority shall be used to promote the national defense. And then it says, under both emergency and non-emergency conditions. Each secretary shall authorize the heads of other agencies as appropriate to place priority ratings on contracts and orders for materials, services, and facilities needed in support of programs approved under different sections. So if you remember in Atlas Shrugged, there were times in which they'd say, oh, for the national good, we have to commandeer this train.
That's right.
So that a certain congressman can get a ride from point A to point B or whatever. You can imagine these various secretaries who are given authority. It doesn't have to be an actual time of war.
Nope.
They just have to say this is needed to prepare.
Because whatever.
For it.
I think this 15 pages could be brought down to two words. You know they are?
What is it?
Power grab.
Yeah, total power grab. Then it says, except as provided by some other section, the authority delegated by this may be used only to support programs that have been determined in writing as necessary or appropriate to promote the national defense. So all they're talking about is promoting the national defense. This is a total
turn of the year.
Right, and this is, as I see it, this is Obama to get as much power as he can arguably legally grab in the name of self-defense, which is something that no Republican or conservative would argue. They say, oh, well, he's promoting self-defense. Who can argue with that? So let me read you this one section that really got me. And, you know, again, I've barely scanned through this legislation, so I've got a executive order.
Ugh.
It reads like a piece of legislation. It's an executive order, which I guess purports to amend legislation, which is why it reads that way. Listen to this one. Part three is entitled Expansion of Productive Capacity and Supply. Section 301, entitled Loan Guarantees, says to reduce current or projected shortfalls of resources, critical technology items, or material essential for the national defense, the head of each agency engaged in the procurement for the national defense is authorized pursuant to this section to guarantee loans by private institutions. They're going to guarantee loans. Now, what happened with our housing crisis?
Exactly right.
Our housing crisis happened because of the federal government guaranteeing bad loans.
And that's the thing. It's nihilism. They understand this. They understand the outcome. They understand what can happen.
Someone in the chat room has put the link up to this particular piece of legislation, so you could check it out. This is one of the things that bothers me.
Are you going to write this down on your blog?
Yeah, I'm gonna go look at this more, and then I'll write about it on my blog at don'tletitgo.com. But just to give you, I mean, in the name of national defense,
and they keep citing that
Obama
right?
sneaks in here. All this authority for these various secretaries has got set up. So he's got a czar of everything. The whole gang. And this one's in charge of water, and that one's in charge of this and that.
And they will control.
And it's not that they have power only in times of war or emergency, but Lord knows when he can declare an emergency.
Whatever they deem.
Loan guarantees. They are now authorized to give loan guarantees just to reduce current or projected shortfalls of resources. So they just have some projections, whatever. Oh, we've got a shortfall. Let's guarantee some loans and make people go out there and do stuff. Critical technology items, et cetera. So this is another stimulus package.
Yeah. Yes, but he'd want to use that name again.
It's a stimulus package in the name of self-defense, and you're supposed to be excited about it. I've got a call waiting here, and let me see what our caller thinks. Hello, who's this?
This is Bob.
Hi, Bob. So are you hearing about...
Your last week. I just wanted to, without changing the subject, listening to the end of your program, I just got in. But it seems to me, and I just want to throw this open for a discussion, probably next week you discuss it, perhaps, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that my knowledge is pretty general in philosophy, but it seems to me there's a great debate still going on. It seems to be the climax of the debate between John Locke and Rousseau's philosophies. Isn't that what's going on today?
So
or
how
am I
so?
Off?
How so? How do you see that?
Well, I see it as John Locke is the person that presents his ideas about man's property rights. I think he was a big defender of that, where Rousseau
yes.
is the opposite. I think that is a big issue here. Would you say that?
Well, I think there's a lot more going on in both philosophers than that, but you could certainly see
no.
property rights as a fundamental issue that is being debated today. There are people who believe that property rights are absolute, that we need to have a capitalist system that is based on all property being privately owned, and that there's no other way to consistently defend freedom and individual rights except for through property rights. So
okay.
in that sense, I definitely agree with you.
Sorry.
Would you say the question I'm posing here is, do you think the debate is still going on between Rousseau and Locke is fundamentally in our country?
I would say that the debate is fundamentally going on between, you know, back to Plato and Aristotle, or more fundamentally Kant versus Ayn Rand. And, you know, you're going to get it more at the fundamental level of altruism versus rational self-interest, because, you know, property rights are going to go away when you've got, property rights are going to go away when you've got self-sacrifice as your moral ideal. So, we've already had Locke, right? And Locke was not able to provide a philosophical foundation that was solid enough so that, for instance, it would uphold our Constitution and uphold our Constitution against the attacks from Kant and Rawls and, you know, all the subsequent people after him. So,
he didn't really do the job as well as Rand did.
No, and people in the chat room are pointing out Locke wasn't totally against sacrifice. He wasn't consistent. Really, on the most fundamental level, it's got to be rejecting altruism, rejecting the idea that the moral ideal is.
Now, how would
the interest of others.
View of Rousseau and his social contract in keeping with what you're saying there?
Well, I mean, with, you know, a social contract, I mean, the idea is that you could be deemed to have agreed to some sort of contract, even if it requires self-sacrifice. And so the fundamental ideal is, I mean, the fundamental idea is, what is a proper function of government? And it's not just anything goes, whatever people agree to, where contracting is the most fundamental. A contract right, a right to contract, comes from something more fundamental, which is property and liberty. And you having the ability to dictate what you do with your time and to have control over the resources and the products of your labor that you create, those rights spring from morality. They don't spring from you and I making an agreement about it. They spring from the nature of man and what's required for his survival. So it has nothing to do with a social contract. It's true that there's a lot of people who talk about the so-called social contract out there, but I think more fundamentally, until we reject altruism, those, you know, even if we could win the debate on the other levels, we would come back down to that. And
so Rand made the essential point in her work.
I believe that, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here having a whole radio show based on her perspective. But not everybody necessarily agrees with me. You might not either.
I do, actually.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much. And
well.
Yeah, of course, we'll talk about this more as time goes on. So, my only purpose in bringing up this executive order. It might be a whole lot of bluster. Some people say that the executive order is just a continuation of something that was also part of an executive order in 1994. So there's this little debate going on, and I have to get more into it. But to me, when I see somebody like a Barack Obama, who's, you know, with Rahm Emanuel and he were discussing about the fact that you never let a crisis go to waste.
Right. That's evil, right.
Some people are speculating that Obama is gearing up to have a big war in the Middle East that will go on and on and on and never end, right?
And therefore, we can't get a new horse, and you know, we got to keep going with this.
Yeah,
thing.
And then you see loan guarantees as part of what all these various secretaries are empowered to do. This sets off some red flags for me. So we'll talk about it more.
With a positive thing. Come on, let's shoehorn something in. Positive.
Let's shoehorn in something positive. What's positive is that maybe people are starting to learn about this. I don't know.
I guess.
Anyway, sorry to end on the bummer note like that. I will try to write something up on my blog about this at don'tletitgo.com. You can check in there during the week. Yeah, definitely. Thanks for people participating in the chat room. If you like the show, you can follow it here on Blog Talk Radio by clicking follow. You can see us on Facebook at the Don't Let It Go Unheard Facebook page. And you can also follow me at Amy Peekoff on
Twitter.
Just
one thing. Check out Red Eye tomorrow night. Something. There's a mention of something that I did.
You might see a little bit of Bosch's work on Red Eye tomorrow night as well. So have a good week, everyone.
Take
Thanks
care, everyone.
For joining in. And we'll talk next time.